Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, September 14th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, good afternoon, Melody.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, and what a day it has been, I'll tell you what. It's middle of the month already. The year is almost over. And every time I come on the radio, I'm going to just wish everybody a Merry Christmas before I miss it. It's just going to go straight by. You know, I'm going to go ahead and do the market reports. And I know this isn't on the schedule, Dave, but out of the American Institute for Economic Research, there was an article about, it was in Friday, about Citibank's $900 million mistake and the finality of payments. And I did not know this, that when Citibank, I think we talked about it on the program, they transferred $900 million to a number of its customers, but Citibank messed up. It was only supposed to send $9 million, not $900 million. So they requested the recipients to return the funds. Most of them did. Except Brigade Capital Management. They decided to keep their $176 million bonanza. They were only owed by Citibank of $1.5 million. So now Citibank, of course, is pursuing Brigade in court to recoup its missing $171 million. And, you know, it's, and I did not know this, but there's a concept in payments and banking called finality. Did you know this?
I did.
And I'm thinking, I wish I had known this about 10 years ago, because the bank, I made a deposit and they added a few extra zeros to it. And it was actually, I ended up with $4 million in the bank. And had I known about this finality, I could have kept it.
Oh, man.
I would not have. I would have given it back. But they actually took it at back, and it, this says they couldn't. So they actually did something illegal.
It's, the difference between you and this hedge fund, Melody.
What's that?
One of you has scruples.
Yes, I know. But the bank, and by reading this, didn't have the right to take it out of my bank account. Once the money is deposited in your account by a bank, you know. Well, of course, they could have looked at it as a deposit error, but from my understanding, once it's there, they're not allowed to take it back out because it's finality of payments.
It's final. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think they could have a difficult time. This finality concept is all about financial system stability, but I think when whether you call it a deposit error or a clerical error, I mean, if it's clear that and it can be documented that, you know, you got the wrong amount, especially such a big difference, I mean, it just seems like the right thing to do. Perhaps the law or regulation needs to be looked at.
Yeah. But I was just asking, ladies and gentlemen, if you get money by accident from a bank, there's something called final.
Wonder if that applies to the IRS.
No.
Wait, I got a refund of $12 million.
Yeah, probably not. But if you want to fight them, you can.
Yeah, really.
But let's go on to gold today. A nice day in gold. We have a New York spot price after market up $17 at $1,958. Silver was up 45 cents at $27.25. Platinum was up $28 at $959. And palladium was down 15 at $2,334. You have the USDX today down 0.22 at $93.02. Crude oil was down a penny at 37.32. And the paper markets today, let's go there. And of course they were, you know, the Dow was up, you know, triple digits. So I went back to the gold. Hold on, ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday, so give me a chance here. So you have the Dow up 327 points at 27,993. The NASDAQ was up 203 points at 11,056. S&P was up 42, 3,383. I'm not really sure, you know, what was the deal in making the markets go higher to those degrees. European Asian markets are pretty flat overnight. And I don't know if there was any one event or one moment or somebody's earnings that pushed it to these higher levels, Dave.
Big tech in
tech.
General. Yeah,
surprise.
Tech
surprise, surprise, surprise. But, you know, again, you know, the stimulus, and again, I think they're just holding out, you know, to see what happens. As long as that stock market's going up, there's going to be no stimulus. You had the Senate Republicans last week. They tried and failed to pass a slimmed-down stimulus bill, and that would have included some new money for small business, schools, and some weekly unemployment benefits. These negotiations are now at a dead-end street. Marco Rubio, Florida senator, said plainly Congress is not going to pass another relief bill before the election. We're about 2 weeks away from a potential government shutdown. Now, you know, my question on that, government didn't shut, as far as I know, government didn't shut down because of COVID. But they're willing to shut them down on debt because they can't pay their bills. Oh, and that's only going to be essential or non-essential jobs, which I think everybody thinks there's a lot of non. Well, that's one area of the business of the economy where people wouldn't have to go back to work. But anyway, spending in the economy is decreasing. We have job gains are slowing. Many small businesses, you know, again, pressuring more assistance from government. And, you know, hey, if you don't have the money, go to government and see if you can't get it from them. The most recent Axios poll has shown little change among Americans' ability to pay their rent or mortgage and afford household goods in the past 2 months. And the story goes on, Dave.
I know it does, doesn't it? Percentage of reported layoffs, furloughs, permanent job losses at the end of August actually was among the lowest since mid-March. Though it's only one percentage point below recent levels. Jim Paulson, who runs investments at the Luthold Group, says that right now there's not a lot of evidence we need that another stimulus bill is needed right away. And, I mean, things are clearly better than they were in March and April, Melody, but they're still far from where they were at the beginning of 2020, much less how they were last year. Fact that more aid isn't coming and will be internalized by households that will pare their budgets and by state lawmakers who are probably going to begin laying off workers and cutting programs in the near future as most of their fiscal years run July to June. It'll be interesting, particularly after how we find out how the election shakes out in Congress, in particular when it comes to the stimulus aid. Julia Coronado, who runs Macro Policy Perspective, says there's a lagged effect. We know that. She added it could unfold over weeks to months, but it's pretty clear it's going to be hard on the economy. So with any new stimulus spending from Congress looking unlikely anytime soon, that could just put more pressure on the Fed to provide additional easing. And that'll make Wednesday's Federal Open Market Committee policy meeting all that more interesting to be on the lookout for, especially the market and investors, Melody.
You know, that's not gonna, they're not going to bring anything new to the table. You know, they're going to remain accommodative. You know, there's going to be the same squawk that we've heard at the at the Wyoming Jackson Hole and, you know, everywhere else. It's, you know, they're not going to say anything to shake up these markets right before an election. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be any impact at all come Wednesday. I mean, you know, it's, I mean, no reports seem to make any difference. I mean, the jobs report, I mean, come on, it doesn't make any difference at all. We're up today. We're up, you know, weeks after, you know, so it's, you know, it's truly incredible what they can do, Dave, to keep these stock markets. But you got to remember, it's all coming from the Federal Reserve. You know, they are pumping money into these systems, and that is why it's going up. Who is buying stocks? Other than your normal ones that we talk about, multinational corporations. We mentioned government shutdown a couple of weeks away. You have the Congress and the White House still remain deadlocked in negotiations over this pandemic relief bill. Negotiations between House and Senate leadership and the White House over a continuing resolution to keep the doors to D.C. open past September 30th. It's just amazing, are expected to start next week when the House returns from recess. Well, you know, I guess the House doesn't take this very, seriously, because they have to wait until they return before they discuss it. I mean, it's you know, really incredible, Dave. You know, it's just, why don't they do their job, all of them? But that's not going to happen. We know that. It's all done by design. Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, and Pelosi, they've insisted there won't be a shutdown. But they seem to be, you know, far enough apart. No stimulus, and both parties are pushing for a clean continuing resolution. Well, when have you ever heard one really actually being clean? Anyway, just to keep the government open. So it's, you know what, it really is disgusting. It really is. Anyway, go ahead.
Now, here we are 2 weeks away from the start of a new fiscal year, and once again, we've got a Congress bogged down in growing partisanship. I mean, it's just amazing that just 10, 12 years ago, Congress, as a rule, was passing a budget every year. Budget was essentially meaningless, as it turns out, because it all depends on what's in the appropriations acts that follow. But all the dozen or so appropriation bills, as a rule, were passed as well, too, providing full funding and a clear picture for American taxpayers how their money was going to be spent. No more. Not only are bills, appropriation bills, not taken up individually. I mean, it's rare, and certainly the exception, when they're passed anymore. So, you know, now this year it looks as though it's going to be a matter of whether government funding continues through December, the end of the year, when there'll be a lame duck session of Congress, presumably, or if, as the Democrats apparently want, funding through at least January, which they hope will get them into a new presidency with a new occupant of the White House, someone more sympathetic to how they want to fund government. So there's even more uncertainty, I think, Melody, as we approach this new fiscal year 2021, and particularly, you know, with this next story about the Treasury Secretary saying now's not the time to worry about the deficit. Things are going to get worse before they get any better, I do believe.
Yeah, I mean, they all know it, that they're just going to continue to pump money into the system. They're not going to worry about the deficit, or they already have a plan. They know where this is headed. They're not worried about the Fed's balance sheet. Mnuchin, with White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, they led the administration's COVID relief negotiations and said the economic crisis warrants extraordinary stimulus from the Congress and the Fed. Well, you know what? If they're saying that now, how can anybody be out there towing the line that, you know, things are getting better? You know, he says now is not the time to worry about shrinking the deficit or shrinking the Fed's balance sheet. No, they're going to continue to grow it. There is going to be no more normal. I mean, and that's just a fact. He says he thinks both the monetary policy working with fiscal policy and what we were able to get done in an unprecedented way with Congress is the reason the economy is doing better. There is no fiscal policy, Dave. You know? Is there? He says Mnuchin's comments critiqued his fellow Republicans who argue that improving jobs data and strong housing figures relax the need for additional spending to combat the impact of the pandemic.
To answer your question, I think there is, in fact, fiscal policy. It's just that in many, if not most cases right now, there is none.
No, there isn't.
Without a budget, which in this sense is just a blueprint of how Congress wants to spend the taxpayer monies in the coming year, but still, it's a plan, and the appropriation bills that enact the budget represent the fiscal policy. Now, you know, to the extent that there was a stimulus package, 3-4 stimulus package, depending on how you count them, that reflects some level of fiscal policy, but it's so, gosh, darn disjointed, dysfunctional. And here we are now, March, April, May, June, July, August, 6 months since the last bipartisan effort to move the country ahead.
And we're 13 seconds into the break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. Acting on your best behavior, turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's been a long time since I've been bringing packages to sell, to offer you and to sell to you. And usually my specials are pretty good. And today I have a 90% silver, $100 face value, and it's quarters and dimes. I guess you can have a mixture or you can have one or the other. It's easier if we just do one or the other, but $100 face value. And we're also going to include a Mint State 63 $20 St. Gaudens. Now, the dates on these, they came in today. They're really pretty coins. And there's a few mixed dates. And of course, we know that the 1924 is the most common year of the St. Gaudens, Mint State 63. And they're very lovely coins, spot free, very, very lovely coins. And we're going to include this in the special for a total of $4,200. The silver is $2,100 for a $100 face. And the Mint State 63 $20 St. Gaudens, that is also $2,100. That is about $120 savings combined on this special. It really is a great deal for $4,200. That does include your shipping. Now, I do know a lot of you just want silver, and I know a lot of you just want the Mint State 63. So you can buy them independent of the special, but we would have to charge a little bit for shipping. If you buy both of them, we'll include the shipping. So you have $100 face value, quarters or dimes, and a Mint State 63 $20 gold piece. The total is $4,200. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And wasn't that long ago that, oh my gosh, we were doing these specials for $100 face and, you know, for a 63 Saint for about $2,700. Wasn't that long ago. Earlier this year, it would have been priced out to that. So what an incredible investment, $4,200, 1-800-375-4188. You know, Dave, big landlord evictions, they surge after moratorium, and we talked about this during the break, and you have big landlords that they've increased the number of eviction cases that they had filed after President Trump had announced his recent moratorium, signaling the struggle tenants face getting protection from the federal order. Now, institutional landlords filed more than 900 eviction cases across 8 metropolitan areas from September 2nd to the 8th. Now, this is data that was compiled by a private equity stakeholder project. Landlords filed 165 cases in the same markets during the week of August 3rd. You know, fears of an evictions crisis have swirled since expanded unemployment benefits and an original moratorium included in the Federal CARES Act expired 6 weeks ago, and with advocates worrying that millions of Americans are going to lose their homes. Now, the Trump ban enacted by the CDC to avert homelessness during a pandemic was seen by tenant advocates as a way to delay evictions, but it didn't provide it didn't provide funding to cover unpaid rent, putting both landlords and tenants at risk and making it difficult to avert this rental crisis. Jim Baker, executive director at the Private Equity Shareholder Project, said, "What's striking is that we're not talking about mom-and-pop landlords. We're talking about gigantic companies."
And, yeah, that...
Go ahead.
No, no, I'm just going to say, you know, that it's a wide range of institutional landlords, and they're defined as those that own thousands of units. I mean, these are big companies. And they're the ones who brought eviction cases during the first week in September, including the industry giants Starwood Capital Group and Invitation Homes Incorporated. Now, tenants who complete necessary paperwork, you figure, should be protected by the latest presidential moratorium. There's some question about whether it contains the teeth that's needed to actually prevent evictions. But besides that and the funding issue that Melody mentioned, there's a big hole if tenants aren't aware of the legal steps required to get protection, and very few actually have lawyers to help them. In more than half the 17 cities tracked by Princeton University's Eviction Lab, cases filed by landlords of all sizes surged after the CARES Act moratorium expired on August 24th. Now, while some building owners may not have been aware of the new tenant protections, others might have been hoping that they could get under the wire, or that local courts might take a landlord-friendly approach to enforcement. So one problem, according to the National Coalition for Civil Rights, the council, is the form tenants have to fill out to get protection, attesting, certifying that they're eligible. A person affiliated with this group said the moratorium's obviously a good thing and it's going to help people, but only if they know it exists. They have to learn the thing exists, get a copy of the form, fill it out properly, get it to their landlord before the landlord rams an eviction through the court. So, tough time out there, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and... you know, it's Starwood Capital Group. You know, those people are still being evicted, but they're going to survive. Your mom, maybe. But your mom and pop landlords, I mean, you're really getting a double whammy there, you know, because you just have, you know, folks who try to get along and so forth.
Yeah. That's where the multiplier effect is really going to.
Yeah.
Kick in and hurt a lot of people.
So, you know, yeah, we can see the larger corporations, but you know, they always can get money, they can get the bailouts, they can do this. It certainly doesn't help the tenants, but you know, Canada might retaliate against America with aluminum tariffs. And I guess they have plans to announce a series of counter tariffs early this week. Canada will. Officials in Ottawa and the Canadian Embassy in Washington confirmed that previously threatened counter tariffs will take effect by Wednesday. The government had said over the summer that unless the U.S. dropped its latest round of aluminum tariffs, Canada would impose $3.6 billion in countermeasures. And it will remain in effect until the U.S. eliminates its tariffs against Canada. Canada is responding to a 10% tariff that was announced in August by President Trump, a move that struck just over half of Canada's aluminum exports to the U.S. The Trudeau government will reveal its choice of U.S. targets from a preliminary list published in August of more than five dozen potentials. The preliminary list includes a disproportionate number of products from swing states that will determine Trump's fate. Isn't that interesting in the upcoming election?
And we're allies. Ay, ay, ay. Eric Miller of the Rideau Potomac Strategy Group said counter tariffs aren't about trying to damage Trump in swing states,
sure,
so much as an
part
effort
of it.
so much as an effort to get the attention of other candidates seeking office there. They want people running for office to get on the phone and advocate for removing the tariffs, according to Miller. Now, other observers, in the meantime, have expressed skepticism over whether there's any chance the administration might be persuaded to back down on tariffs, especially this close to an election. Last time Canadian metals faced tariffs, it took several months of pressure to get them removed, and it will likely require help from the powerful congressional allies like the Republican chair of the Senate Finance Committee, Chuck Grassley of Iowa. Grassley had threatened to stall the UMSCA trade agreement, our new trade agreement with Canada and Mexico, unless tariffs were removed. In fact, that led to the 2019 agreement, which ended across-the-board U.S. tariffs on a wide range of steel and aluminum products and sets limits on similar disputes in the future. Here's the thing. The agreement says any future retaliation must target only a metal that's in dispute and not expand the fight to other sectors like farm goods, such as corn in Grassley's home state of Iowa.
You stay away from us.
Yes. So we'll see what happens. But just when you thought it was safe to go back in the trade waters, Melody, it looks as though there's some little sharks and barracudas and piranha and other various animals that just could bite your toes.
I know last week we talked about building supplies, the wood, lumber.
Yeah.
That how their prices have risen significantly, and a lot of that comes from Canada also.
Yeah, so, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting to know whether those prices are due to inflation or a little bit of, you know, I don't know, but...
No, you're not suggesting politicking, are you?
Oh, Dave.
Oh, there you go again.
No. Speaking of politicking, Japan's chief cabinet secretary, Yoshihide. Is that correct?
That sounds good to me.
Yoshihide Suga. Is set to become the next prime minister after Abe. Suga easily won the vote, taking 377 of the 534 valid votes cast by Liberal Democrat Party lawmakers and regional representatives, significantly ahead of his two rivals. Given his party's legislative majority, he is expected to handily win the parliamentary vote Wednesday and become the prime minister. And of course, Abe is supposedly resigning for health reasons. 71-year-old repeated his pledge to continue Abe's policies as he accepted the party's nomination as leader in order to overcome the crisis and give the Japanese people a sense of relief. We need to succeed in what Abe had been implementing. He says that is his mission. So, I don't know. We'll see.
It'll be interesting. It sets the stage for Shinzo's departure, though. I mean, he's been Japan's longest-serving prime minister, more than 8 years in power over two terms. Interestingly, declined to endorse Suga or any of the other candidates, but pledged to fully support Suga after his win, saying he'd watched him working hard and quietly for the nation and people.
I don't know if this had anything to do with a little bit of a drop in oil. What, the penny? The penny drop in oil today. But there was a new report that the mega oil company BP says global oil consumption will plateau early this decade. BP now sees this moment arriving a decade sooner than last year's version of their long-term outlook for oil and gas, coal, renewable cars, and so forth. He says the new projection signals how the pandemic is reshaping analysts' views. Well, I don't know about that, but the timing of peak oil demand and how steeply and quickly it declines will affect corporate and government strategies and the finances of oil-producing nations. BP projects demand for liquid fuels, a rough proxy for oil, entering a long plateau in the early 2020s. That scenario assumes government policies, technologies, social preferences continue to evolve in a manner and speed seen over the recent past. So oil is plateauing.
Oil demand significantly affected by the pandemic.
Yes.
It'll be interesting. I mean, what I'm initially seeing as sort of an offshoot of this is how it reflects just another industry, so of course a major industry around the world, and how there's an expectation that all bets are off, that there is going to be this new, whatever we're going to call it, new order, new normal, but that things are not going to be the way they've been. I mean, we know the COVID-19 just in the past 6 months, a lot of people think it's triggering behaviors that are going to last a long time, possibly forever, as we move forward. One of them certainly affecting oil demand is more people work from home for a longer period of time than what was at least initially expected. So interesting report here, Melody.
Very much so. You know, this is kind of interesting. Well, we're just about out of time, but UBS and Credit Suisse, they're talking about merging.
Ooh,
and it would create one of Europe's largest banks. They have a project. They nicknamed it Signal. And the UBS chair, Axel Weber, is really, this is being driven by him, who is working on his counterpart at Credit Suisse, Urs Rohner. And Weber has discussed the idea with the Swiss finance minister. And it could actually happen by early next year. And Europe's banking industry is under pressure to consolidate because of the pandemic. And Spain's has two banks, but they're exploring a merger to form the largest lender in that country. Is this a trend, Dave? We might talk about that when we come back from the break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. A $4,200 special today includes $100 face value of 90% quarters or dimes. We also have a Mint State 63, $20 St. Gaudens. The $4,200 does include your shipping costs, but you can break out each coin or the silver out of the package if you like, but we will have to charge a shipping on that. But shipping is very little. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. It's 1-800-375-4188. Heading into the break, we were talking about banks merging. I mean, UBS and Credit Suisse are pretty big banks. And you have Spain's Caixa Bank and Bankia. They said this month that they're exploring a merger to form the largest lender in that country. While a deal between the two Swiss banks would allow for overlap to be eliminated, executing such a transaction could be difficult, Dave.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm certainly not surprised by this. I mean, we know that in Europe, I mean, all around the world, I mean, the U.S. is merger and acquisition is the talk of the town this year. But in Europe, consolidation among financial institutions, the banking industry in particular, has been front and center. But consolidation doesn't make sense. I mean, it might for the institutions, but when I say it doesn't make sense, it's for the consumers. I mean, the lack of, and keep in mind that most of Europe has been experiencing negative rates since last year, and some before that. And like all other mergers and acquisitions, particularly those between already mega companies, or even just one mega company over a not so mega company, it by definition has to reduce competition. And that is almost never good for consumers and good for a nation's economy. And I think that's what one of the main thing. I mean, I think it's a thing we've gotten away from in this country for sure. Over the last, well, it's been a growing period now, Melody. But policymakers, I mean, have just got to step it up. The Justice Department, where are they? Not just in this administration, but in the last probably three or four, maybe longer. It's one after the other. This is just an economy of buying for big business. And it's not just not helping consumers, it's hurting us. Just look at what's going on. We have a story here in a minute about Amazon and price gouging, and it's what happens. It's a symptom of what happens when we let competition get away from us. And it's the hallmark of any effective economy. I mean, what are your thoughts, Melody? They're from a banking perspective, sure, you know, there are economies of scale. I mean, look at this, the Credit Suisse UBS proposed merger. They're talking about cuts equal to 10 to 20% of their workforce, 15,000 people worldwide. I mean, it just seems like the too big to fail keep getting bigger, the rich keep getting richer, and it's at the expense of all of us. I mean, what do you think?
Well, you know, when you talked about years and again, this is just a symptom of where we are in today's world. You have these mergers with these banks. It's all being consolidated, and it really isn't surprising. And you're going to have a few who control everything. That's just all part of it. And you're right. These banks just keep getting bigger and bigger, and it's all on the taxpayers' dollar because they will all get bailed out. And you're right. I mean, look at Amazon. You were going to talk about how Amazon, you know, everybody thinks they're getting such a great deal from Amazon. Oh, I go to, because I'm going to, you know, I can shop and, you know, blah, 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 save some money. And it was that way in the beginning. But anymore? No. You probably charge more now than if you went to your local shops and bought things. And now you have a watchdog group that's accusing Amazon of jacking up prices for essential goods. Even though the company has blamed spikes on third-party merchants, well, they should be able to control their third-party merchants if it's going through Amazon. I mean, doesn't eBay control? I mean, that's one thing you can say about eBay. I'm not a fan of eBay by any means, but I think they do have some. I don't know if they do or not, but it's not retail though either. You know, Amazon, they hiked prices for 10 basic products, from cornstarch, flour, hand sanitizer, and face masks, as much as 1,010% from February to mid-August. Now, this is according to a report from Public Citizen. All of the products reviewed were listed as sold by Amazon and not sold by third-party vendors. The findings, Public Citizen said, contradict Amazon's claims that outside vendors were responsible for these prices surging. The group identified price hikes ranging from 48% to more than 1,000% for products listed as sold by Amazon. Maybe that's how they can afford all of the boxes that they use to ship one stupid item instead of putting two or three items in one box like they used to. Now it's they ship each. It amazes me. But anyway, the biggest markup was for a 6.5-ounce package of cornstarch, which Amazon was caught selling for $8.99. while other retailers charge just 89 cents. There was also a 1,000% hike for a pack of 50 disposable face masks, which are considered important for controlling. That was listed for $39.99 in the spring. Public Citizen said the product went for around $4 before the pandemic. So, you know.
Well, now Amazon, in defending itself, you know, claims Public Citizen just sampled a tiny number of the hundreds of millions of products the company monitors, and Amazon said it fixed the problems as soon as they were brought to its attention. Question is, what would have happened if it hadn't been brought to their attention? An Amazon spokesperson said, "Our systems are designed to meet or beat the best available price amongst our competitors, and if we see an error, we work to quickly fix it." Yeah, it's sort of like the biff barf of sportscasters, ladies and gentlemen, who says, "I call it the way I see it, and if I don't see it, I make it up." You know,
sounds like our newscasters too.
just the blame game seems a little bit dubious. In any event, Amazon says it suspended more than 10,000 selling accounts for attempted price gouging and has referred the worst offenders to law enforcement.
Does that include themselves?
Well, self-reporting now, there's a new concept.
Because I understand if it's sold by Amazon, it's sold by, you know, they would be part of the guilty
indeed
group.
Yeah. I suspect they'll leave that up to some other good Samaritan.
What's good for the goose is not good for the gander.
Indeed.
So, anyway, let's see.
Get it.
Let's see what else we got. Let's go to... this is interesting, I think. Where... I'm not quite sure how it would work, but Thailand wants to link the Indian and Pacific Oceans. For decades, Thailand had an ambitious plan of dredging a canal through the country's narrowest point, and the goal? To link the Indian and the Pacific Oceans by bypassing the Strait of Malacca, one of the world's busiest shipping lanes, and potentially cutting travel time by 5 days. That particular plan never came to fruition, partly because of the cost involved. It's, I guess it would be kind of like a Panama Canal.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And but as the narrow sea lane between Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore gets more congested, the Thai government is revisiting a plan for a bypass linking the Asia-Pacific region with India and the Middle East. To avoid dredging a canal, the government is proposing an alternate pathway through its southern isthmus.
Yeah, this is an interesting alternative, proposing to build two automated seaports, one on the Indian Ocean side, another on the Pacific side, and link the two ports with a 100-kilometer expressway and rail network to transport goods between them. So that's an interesting option. Apparently, the country's now in the process of examining the plan and hopes, I guess their hope is to cut shipping time by at least 2 days. Now, again, still by avoiding the crowded Strait of Malacca. So again, showing Thailand's ambitious plans to become the region's transportation and logistics hub, certainly supported by its location in the middle of mainland Southeast Asia, just below that other beast, which it's in the shadow of, El China.
China.
Yes, ma'am.
China. Well, you know, we question, could an economic war with China lead to the Great Reset? Everybody's talking about the Great Reset. It's a conversation I have, a dozen times a day about the reset. And everybody is focused on the reset. Brandon Smith wrote that an economic war with China is the last step before the Great Reset. Recent generations have grown up conditioned to believe that through the power of central bank fiat currency, all problems can be solved. He argues that we're in the middle of a collapse dynamic, and the structure we used to view as reliable are now crumbling. The Fed knows all that they're doing with the stimulus measures is just delaying the inevitable. And I agree with them 100%. That's what we say on this program, day in and day out. But he says that all that's left for the banks is to conjure enough scapegoats to avoid being blamed for the coming fallout. And I think when something that big, you don't need scapegoats. I really don't think you need, because it's so big and so devastating. Nobody really cares. They're just dealing with the problem and trying to survive. So, maybe... But then just like now, 2008, during that Great Recession, you could see who was responsible. And the elites can swoop in to save the day with a new system of their choosing and heralded as heroes by the very media conglomerates they own a stake in. And I think they already have the new system. I mean, it's... but he goes on and talks about the U.S.-China trade war. And to be clear, Smith says China is not innocent in any of this. And those who claim the Chinese are victims of globalists have no understanding of the long-running relationship that Chinese have had with Western elites. Agreed. Smith adds that the people who say that our economic war with China is somehow legitimate and that China is going to be punished for their trespasses are fooling themselves.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting perspective. Smith believing the trade war is not designed to punish China. It's designed to further offer further distraction and perhaps a scapegoat event for the economic collapse that the Fed and other central banks around the world have created. Now, Chinese ties to the IMF, their involvement in building a cashless society, participation in digital currency frameworks, all of them, at least, are leading Smith to believe they intend to have a large seat at the table of the Great Reset. With the amount of capital and technology being funneled into China over the past two decades, Smith says not to count on the establishment to then try to destroy their favorite new economic engine.
Absolutely. They will have a large seat at the table. I mean, they're all part of it. So 800-375-4188. Thank you, Dave. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe. Good night and God bless.
Bye-bye. For me, that's too bad.